All right, I don't know what time it is on your clock, but I know what I'm getting ready for. It is time for the Professional CISO Podcast with David Malico.
Welcome to the Professional CISO Podcast. I'm your host, David Malico. This show is an exploration of the topics necessary to professionalize the role of the CISO. Today, we have an interview with a security leader who's been in healthcare for many years and the security realm for many years, both on the offensive and defensive side. So I met him about 2 years ago, and I think immediately what I thought was, man, the lights are on in somebody's home, which, you know, that's a good thing, especially when you're talking about the cybersecurity community. So notable things, he is an adjunct professor, not the only things, but the notable things, he's an adjunct professor at the University of Texas at Dallas, and he's also bilingual, which maybe he'll talk about that a little bit later. So before we begin, I do want to talk a little bit about our foundation sponsors, a little shout out. So we had some folks, we're early on in the process of this podcast, and we had early sponsors that decided to come on board. They saw the vision, and so I do want to give a shout out to Interpret Security, which is here today, by the way. Nick Lanta, the CEO, Michael Jinks, CTO, Ian Roth, head of product. We appreciate what they're doing out there. If you hadn't seen them yet, they are stitching everything together when you're talking about continuous threat and exposure management. So they're providing that intelligence layer. Check them out. They're doing some good work over there. The other is ContraForce. So Stan Golubchik and Ricky Melendez over at over there at ContraForce. What they're doing is they're pushing the boundaries when it comes to SecOps hyper automation. So they're out there, they're taking the time from the time you get the notice all the way till you get response. They're cutting that down significantly, hitting that MSP and MSSP space, but it's also good for on-prem as well. And so now, let's talk about professionalizing that CISO role. So today's guest is James Benford. He has held positions at AWS, US Bank, and Google. Please welcome James Benford.
Hello, everybody. What an honor. You have a great voice, sir.
Oh,
I don't know if I ever told you that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So what I always like to start with, this is it's a human story, right? And so I like to give my guests an opportunity to talk about how they got where they're at today. So even start, you know, as a youngster, young James, what does he look like? About this tall, blue eyes, short hair.
About as tall as I am now,
okay.
Certainly.
And talk me that 1 to 2 minute, your origin story.
Yeah, absolutely. The professional version or?
You can give me any version you
absolutely.
Want.
Absolutely. Okay, so I'm looking at my career sort of in three different chunks. Started as a builder, relatively young, 14 years old, back when, you know, PHP was becoming a big thing. Not the bane of the existence that it is now. Started building websites, built a couple of content management systems, sold them for a little bit of money, realized the tech was for me. And I sort of look at the end of that builder phase, culminating in my work at AWS as a solutions architect. I've also had a defender phase. That's where I was before I took this role on 3 months ago. A friend of ours, Ryan Reynolds, brought me into security. Mentorship is so important, by the way. And an example of that is my career. I got pulled into security by somebody that saw something in me while I was on the builder side of things. So he brought me in and I started doing endpoint detection and response. And I feel like that culminated in my time at Google doing API security and doing a little bit of cloud infrastructure security. It certainly got me into the cloud space. Now I've moved into the offensive security space. So I'm learning a lot. This is, we're talking at the beginning of my journey. So nothing I say comes with any warranties, implicit or otherwise, and no refunds. So.
Excellent. Thank you. Appreciate that. So being that you've worked on both sides now, right? And again, understanding your time in the offensive side is a little limited. So is there anything that you can talk about that you've brought over from your defensive side now to your offensive side? Kind of what are your initial observations, initial maybe realizations?
You know, in security, we have a real struggle helping the business understand what our value is. We talk about it all the time, right? We're a cost center. You know, we're not a revenue generator. This is a topic that comes out at every conference. And as a BISO, which was my role before this, my job was really to help the business understand their security posture, but also to understand the value that we're bringing as a security organization. And I think what I'm beginning to realize, is that if the security organization at large has a problem expressing its value to the business, offensive security in particular has a challenge with that. And I think it comes from the fact that in security, we're all creating a ton of work for our businesses, right? Every vulnerability we find is something somebody has to fix. And in offensive security, not only are we finding vulnerabilities, but we're finding stuff that when we break it, is gonna take a long time to fix. So we have two problems. One, getting prioritized in that long list of vulnerabilities and issues that the business already has to fix, you know, the list that we beat them over the head with. And two, convincing them that for these really large problems that we have, it's worth the investment and the time to get the problems resolved. And, you know, we're competing with budgets, we're competing with other security teams that have concerns, we're competing with the business's goals. So sort of an extension of this big problem that we have, this big challenge that we have in security, in offensive security as well.
Is there anything that has surprised you or enlightened you necessarily now that you're running offensive security, right? I mean, because I think, right, you spend so many years in that defensive side and you kind of get that mindset, you kind of get that, you know, now as you move up that chain, and I think as any mid-tier leader now moves into the upper tier or even into the CISO role, now there's so much more that you have to account for. So maybe you can provide us with some interesting insight relative to, you know, somebody that just made that switch.
Yeah. I'll be a little somewhere between the strategic and tactical with this. It shocks me just how much talent there is on the offensive security side. And obviously I'm very bullish on the role because I just started and I'm, you know, these are my people are new to me and all that, but the talent density in this area is ridiculous if you can find it. And there are ways beyond just penetration testing and red teaming and bug bounty that you can use your offensive security teams as. You know, there are different roles that they can play. If you've got an offensive security team and you've got a threat modeling function, or especially if you don't have a threat modeling function, make sure that you're bringing the attacker's perspective into that. And I think the other thing that I realize, and it sort of ties into what I was saying before this, the offensive security team does not get as much conversation directly with the business. What I've seen at all organizations that I've been at that have some sort of offensive security function is that they are seen as the scary, brilliant hackers. Everybody loves to talk for about 30 seconds about what they do, but then it's right back to business, right? If you really want to grow the voice of the attacker, which is my mission with my team, you've got to start bringing your offensive security team into these discussions with the business. The way we're going to accomplish that is, of course, through the BISO role. Our BISOs give quarterly perspectives, and more as necessary, but at least quarterly perspectives to their business lines about what they think of the of their organizational security posture. And they always come with themes, and it's always a wonderful conversation. We are going to bring offensive security themes into what the BISO has to say, and we're going to help make it real with, you know, demonstrations and conversations.
Now, is that direct learning from your time as a BISO?
Absolutely. So, you know, I didn't realize that this function had so much, you know, so many skills that you could avail of it, right? So much stuff you could pull out of it.
So clarity aside, just to make sure, I always try to sit in the seat of the audience a little bit. So when you, we all know that you can define things a certain way. So when we talk about offensive security, most people go red team.
Yeah.
What else do you have under that banner?
Yeah. So I look at OFSEC as penetration testing, which is my biggest group. Red team, bug bounty, and also breach and attack simulation falls underneath us.
Okay, excellent. All right, so let's shift back to defense for a little while because this is more the blue team side of things for the podcast generally anyway.
Sure.
But again, I think all very relevant. So in your experience from the defensive side, what practical advice would you give, having spent that much time, for the current practitioners out there, specifically in healthcare? Obviously, we're here for a healthcare conference.
Yeah. Practical advice is don't get so irritated by the word AI anymore. I know I'm tired of hearing it too, but there's just going to be more and more of it. The business is demanding it. And more importantly, there's a lot of regulation coming from the government side about offensive security in particular in this space. So expect to hear more. So for instance, I think in October, the Biden administration released an executive order on AI safety.
Mm-hmm.
Red Team is mentioned in that document twice. Now, it's in the context of these large foundational models that are more massive than any of us in this room are ever going to build. But as far as executive orders are foreshadowing of what's to come, it's only a matter of time that they start looking at smaller models, looking specifically at places like healthcare and banking with concerns about equity, fairness, health, right? And it's only a matter of time before your red teams actually have to start, you know, hitting these AI models. So if you're in security, don't run away from the word AI anymore. Just embrace it and be ready for it to be a bigger part of your security life.
And so for those practitioners out there that are in, let's say, the
second 50% that is of uptake,
yeah.
right? And particularly related to the idea that around patient care issues or concerns, things like that. You say AI in one breath, but then how do you deal with the other side of that, right? To say it's coming, yeah. but how do I account for it if I'm that practitioner?
How do you account for
it? How do I account for it if I'm in that more the lower 50% that of uptake on
getting started on your journey? Yeah. This is again security being very close to the business. You know, if you're not a large organization, you don't have BISOs. Surely you've got somebody who's a representative to your business lines. If your business is planning on using AI, they've got to have some sort of plan. You know, we talked about this earlier. We're past the point of saying no to AI, but we're not past the point. We haven't quite gotten to a good job as an industry, a security industry, of understanding what our business's use cases for AI are. We've got to start getting in those conversations before they start implementing, right? That means being a part of whatever center of excellence or AI council that your business more than likely has. But I guess my point is you've got to get in there and have the conversation and stop shying away from it. You got to be a proactive part of those discussions.
So one of my previous episodes with the CEO of Uno AI, Shashank Tiwari, one of his recommendations was go out and have that talk, right? Yep. Go out and proactively seek the conversations.
Absolutely.
Inject this into and be the voice of reason. Because
right.
there is this, it's sensational on one side that we have to do it. We have to keep up.
Right.
And then there's the sensational on the other side of, no, the world's going to end.
Right.
It lies somewhere in the middle, and you have an opportunity to be that voice of reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And the one that can truly bring a little bit of order to that chaos.
Yeah, bridging the gap and busting down those silos, right?
Right. Okay, great.
Today's episode is sponsored by ContraForce. When you need to get maximum productivity from your existing Microsoft security stack and other leading tools, you should be working with ContraForce. Specifically targeted at the MSP and MSSP space, ContraForce reduces security operations complexity and empowers the next generation of security response through generative security operations. And it is all possible leveraging an organization's existing security tools. The ContraForce SecOps workspace reduces complexity for the security analyst by automating time-consuming tasks across end customer detection and response tools, empowering them with insights and frictionless access to information and remediations. The result is massive improvement in analyst efficiency and security effectiveness. ContraForce eliminates security fatigue. They have increased speed of connector deployment, one-click incident response, and they stack responses with incident response gamebooks. To see ContraForce in action and to learn how you can reduce your SecOps complexity and churn while leveraging your existing tools, visit www.contraforce.com. We appreciate ContraForce's support as a foundation sponsor of the Professional CISO Podcast.
All right, so I want to talk a little about leading up, right? So oftentimes we find ourselves in a place where we're only influence, right? We can only influence, and maybe it's up and over. So what's some advice from the middle, let's say, that you would give to like healthcare CISOs?
Yeah, like about having the discussion with your business about—
Or about anything, honestly. Yeah. This is more open than that.
Yeah, I think you got to be a good storyteller, right?
Right.
That's critical. So. Know what your message is, know what two or three points you're trying to make, be very clear about those points, tie them into themes and narratives if you can, and if you can bring evidence of your claims, do that. If you've got an offensive security team and you want to talk about an issue in your business partner's security posture, and you can bring that offensive security team to bear to show that there really is a problem, then you're really winning. But it all starts with storytelling, narrative, and connecting as human beings.
So if I'm a... let's say someone just below a CISO role or maybe a beginning CISO, and I feel like I definitely have that imposter syndrome when it comes to storytelling,
yeah.
right? Is that something I practice? Do I get in front of the mirror? Do I get some trusted person
yeah.
that I get next to and say, hey, can you show me how to do this? Or can you help me practice? Because, I mean, is it that easy?
I think it's more fundamental. You start with writing. One industry-wide thing that I've noticed, and really it's generally a tech problem, we hate to write. Like, we like Visio diagrams, but we don't like words. You've got to, and this is when I look back in 9 months at the things that I brought to my team, one of the things that I hope they say is, you brought a culture of writing into the organization that's helped us to be more clear in our thoughts, helped us to be more influential, and helped us to gather and put together a story before we went and told it. So I'm a big believer in that culture of writing. We do it with one pagers. We do it with every major decision. We write it down. And I think if you're a good writer, it will follow that you will be a good storyteller. Because telling a story is all about just putting together a cohesive narrative with a beginning, middle, and end, right? And it all starts with writing.
So I'll give a little personal story real quick. So I'm helping my son. He's in college. He's a senior down at Tarleton State. And he's doing a paper. And initially, we started with just some notes. And my recommendation was him, so this is where the practical advice comes in, right? Say, hey, take those notes and create an outline, right? And then flesh that outline out a little bit. Do this in iteration, right? And then at that point, your paper is almost going to write itself to a degree, right? And then you take each of those sections and start putting those into paragraphs. And you plan your paragraphs. Now all of a sudden, you have a draft. And just understand that draft is going to suck, quite honestly, right? But leave it. Don't try to tweak it. Don't try to do anything with it. Walk away. Come back later. Read it. Understand why it sucks. And then start doing it for editorial, right? So I think that's that practical advice to go 100%. Away.
Definitely. Yeah, that's the Amazon way. Don't be afraid of the ugly copy.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
I love that process.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good stuff. And so let's say our final, not our final question, but our final content question. Can you talk about the future of healthcare security, both offensive and defensive? Maybe start with defensive for this crowd.
Future of healthcare security is totally the VC. So absolutely. Yes. Thank you for that pitch. I mean, it's the sort of the, I'm sorry, AI is definitely going to be a big part of this conversation, but obviously ransomware is a huge concern as well. We still have a massive ransomware problem to solve and it's not going anywhere and we still haven't really resolved it. I also think, so something I've learned from the Change Healthcare thing, you know, this is, I've only been in this role for, I've been in healthcare for about 2 years. So I am far from understanding all of the intricacies and interconnectedness of the things that we do on a daily basis. I think the future is probably going to be helping the business start disconnecting some of these component parts. Mm. I expect that the Change Healthcare thing, there's going to be a ton of, there's probably going to be congressional hearings. There are already, I think, executive orders. So we can expect a lot of noise from that. And I think that noise is all going to be about, you know, distributing and starting to break apart this very tightly tied together system that we have. That's important to, that sounds like a technology problem, but it's important to security because anytime you make major changes like that, security is going to have to be a part of that discussion, right?
So it becomes a supply chain issue at
it's
that point.
Third-party risk, supply chain, but it's also technology,
right? So. The technology supporting.
Absolutely.
Okay, so
that's the defensive side.
Defensive side, yeah. Offensive side.
Offensive side, I'll tell you what I'm thinking about. Sort of, and we're not there yet, but this is on my roadmap. I am thinking a lot more about AI, mm-hmm. right? And red teaming in particular and penetration testing AI, because more and more of the applications that we create have AI in them. More and more of the decisions that we make, customer facing and automated decisions that there's no human in the loop for, right? Like claims decisions and stuff like that, it's more and more driven by AI in this industry, right? So I am thinking about penetration testing and red teaming. I am particularly thinking about red teaming because it seems like there are two types. There's the red teaming of the infrastructure. You know, can I get to your data stores? Can I get somewhere in feature engineering and make changes to the way that you're building out your features? Can I embed something in your models? And then when you deploy it, can I do something to change the results of your inference? So that's one thing. I think that's the thing we all think about when it comes to red teaming AI. But then the other thing is actually using the AI. Like prompt engineering has sort of become this role. Well, there's a red team version of that too. So I don't think that's a skill set that's really out there on the market right now because it's so new, but I am thinking a lot about how do I upskill my red team and help them upskill themselves to be able to take on this sort of new red teaming challenge, this new way of looking at attacking systems.
Okay. Interesting. That's out there. Yeah. I mean, in a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a stretch, right? But.
Okay, so we have come to the critical point in the interview.
My favorite part of the show, always.
It's the favorite part for most people. So, well, I call this 10 questions. And so this is, it's a human story. And what I do is this set of questions, I always call it kind of a Rorschach test, but with words. And I do it with all my interviews because I think it provides insight into the people that we have working in our community and in our industry. So we are starting with the 10 questions for James Benford. James.
I learned so much about myself.
What is your favorite word?
Favorite word. Can do, what kind of a phrase?
Is that hyphenated?
Yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
Just make it short.
Or just one together.
Yeah,
can
gotcha,
do.
Gotcha. What is your least favorite word?
Least favorite word. Synergy.
What area of your work do you find most interesting?
People. how humans interact with each other and complex systems.
What area of your work do you find most challenging?
Compliance.
I always like how the ones, the negatives, tend to be this one short answer, just bam. What sound or noise do you love?
The sound of a jet engine cranking up. Because you're going somewhere.
Leaving on a jet plane.
Yeah, that's
right? Gotcha.
Right.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Ooh, car crash.
It's not the first answer that time. Somebody had answered that before.
That's a scary noise.
What is your favorite curse word?
Curse word, probably the F word.
F bomb.
Yeah, I just sort of drop it in randomly.
With my Marine Corps background, I can identify with that.
My dad was Army infantry.
There you go. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Like outside of technology, completely.
Yep.
Professional golfer.
Nah, yeah, like that.
I would fail miserably, but it'd be fun.
What profession would you not like to do?
I don't like, the first job I ever got fired from, the only job I've ever gotten fired from, was as a baker. I was 15 years old and I was terrible at it. I couldn't get the timing done.
A baker?
Yeah. So I tried like hell and they ended up giving me 2 weeks notice because they knew I was trying really hard. They could have fired me on the spot. So I know for a fact that is the one field I will never be successful at and I will avoid for the rest of my life.
I can honestly say I've never met a baker before.
Yeah. Well, you haven't met one today either.
And the final question, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear your God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You've built a good legacy. You left behind some good people on the earth.
All right. So in this episode, we have covered quite a bit. We taught offensive and defensive security. We have talked about maybe some leading up, right? We've talked about what does that path look like for healthcare security going forward? I truly appreciate everybody in the room being here. And I do want to say, colleagues and friends, I renew the call. It is time to professionalize the role of the CISO. Until next time, I wish you health, happiness, and success in your journey on becoming the professional CISO. Let's do this.
We're professionalizing the CISO role, so please subscribe to the Professional CISO Podcast.